Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
CBSI and the World with Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor, and I'm very much pleased to welcome Henry Rome, Senior Fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, who's going to help me catch up on sanctions in Iran. There's so many sanctions being tossed around these days that my scorecard is all marked up. Henry, a very good evening to you. The Iran sanctions, are they regarded as successful? Because Iran's been boasting to Moscow it knows how to beat them. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks very much for having me on. I think I think it's really two questions you're asking. Are the sanctions in theory effective and very kind of comprehensive? Yes, but they are not being enforced in practice. And you can see that in the steady rise of Iranian oil exports over the past 6 months and even longer. They've reached a 4-year high. And so I think there's a difference between what's on paper and what's in practice. And this is part and parcel, I think, of U.S. efforts to try to encourage Iran to de-escalate in its relations with the West.
Not being enforced. Who's the enforcer if it's not happening? Is there one person, one entity?
So I think it's been a decision from the United States to try to take some pressure off, especially on enforcement of Iranian oil and petrochemical exports. This isn't new necessarily. Back early in the administration, this was part of the goal of coaxing Iran back into the 2015 nuclear agreement, into compliance with it. And more recently, as Iranian oil exports have risen, the U.S. has not taken steps to try to suppress that, I think, out of an effort to try to de-escalate tensions with Tehran.
Malcolm?
We've seen that Iran's position seems to be getting stronger, despite the fact that its economy still is poor. It's had more oil income, as you noted. What would you assess the United States' hope in doing a deal now to get Iran to do more favorably? Is it really the limited restrictions on the nuclear program? Is it some lesser threat to some of our allies? What tangible result could there really be from this?
Well, I think the overwhelming focus for the U.S. and the European allies involved in this, France, Germany, and the U.K., is on the nuclear program, to try to at least press pause on Iranian advances and maybe try to roll Iran back from the threshold or a level at which it's clear that it would be building a nuclear weapon. So I think the idea is to try to put some time and space in between Iran and that type of eventuality. There are other things on the agenda too, of course. There's Iranian regional behavior, its support of Russia, as mentioned earlier, human rights issues domestically. But I think the nuclear issue continues to top the agenda for the Western governments, as well as Israel in particular.
So does that put Congress in the position then of being able to pass the resolutions that have been introduced, legislation about demanding review, if it's in fact focused on those issues? Wouldn't Congress have a right to demand the right to review? And the administration seems clearly trying to bypass Congress on whatever they negotiate.
Well, the crux of the matter, as you and your listeners may know, surrounds the issue of what is an agreement and what isn't. What the definition of is. And in this case, the administration is trying to pursue a understanding that doesn't kind of reach the level of an agreement written down on paper, because doing so would trigger congressional review. Now, there are some in Congress who view that whatever is being negotiated now does rise to that level. And there are, I'm sure, plenty of lawyers on both sides of this issue who would be able to litigate it better than I. But I think the clear approach from the U.S. government is to say that this is not an agreement for the purposes of the relevant legislation, and therefore is not subject to congressional review. What I would say is that under those constraints, where, you know, you can't have anything written down, it really limits what's possible to get out of this type of understanding or non-deal that's being negotiated. And so it really constrains the prospects or what's kind of productive that can come out of these negotiations, because it has to be fairly vague on all sides without a mechanism for seeing whether there's compliance.
In Foreign Affairs, you and a colleague have published this sentence, which is intriguing. In other words, Plan C is an acknowledgement that although the status quo is not good, the alternatives could be far worse. What? Give me an example of an alternative to the status quo, Henry.
So I think for the U.S. administration, the view is that an Iranian nuclear weapon or some kind of conflict in the Middle East that would arise out of an Iranian effort to get a nuclear weapon, those are clear outcomes that they want to avoid. And so I think we were trying to do our best to portray how the U.S. has been thinking about this. And the kind of Plan C that we describe, you could say Plan A was the return to JCPOA, which the administration pursued in 2021 and 2022. It failed. Plan B was one that was proposed by Israel and a number of observers in the U.S. and Europe, which was to try to increase pressure, economic, political, military, on the Iranians to try to coerce them potentially into getting back into the nuclear deal or into another type of deal. The administration resisted that, given the risks that could come with ratcheting up pressure. And so we've ended up in Plan C, which in the article is, as you pointed out, we highlight a number of potential risks to that and kind of challenges, even if it were to, quote unquote, succeed.
Malcolm?
So in terms of the visits of the foreign minister of Iran now to the UAE, the various diplomatic missions, the pulling out of the naval alliance and creation of an Iranian-led alliance, is this truly a shift? Is it more against the United States and the feeling the United States has abandoned them? Do they really see Iran, the Gulf states see Iran in a different light? While they have always tested to recognizing the true threat that they pose and continue to pose to them.
So I think from the point of view of the Gulf states, the U.S. policy has been confusing and inconsistent over the past decade, and even more recently, I think it's been fairly clear that the Gulf states don't view the U.S. kind of security commitment to be as solid as maybe they viewed it in the past. And so I think in the absence of clear commitments or clear understanding of the U.S. direction, they've started to take their own initiative. So over the past year, the Kuwait, UAE, and Saudi Arabia have all mended ties, at least formally, with Iran. I don't think there are any illusions here in Gulf capitals that Iran is really any different fundamentally than it was before. But I think they are more willing to test the idea that some type of cooperation and diplomacy, at least, would be able to ratchet down tensions in the absence of confidence in that the U.S. Has their back. I think that's the core of what's driving this, in my view.
Henry, we have less than a minute. We're in an election season now. The president has announced his reelection campaign. The Republicans are gathering for debates. Is this the time for Plan C in an election cycle, or is this to wait till after the 24 election? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, I think that's precisely the motivation behind Plan C, because it is quite unambitious and modest, and because it would not go through congressional review. I think this is precisely the kind of policy that the administration hopes can carry them for the next 18 months and try to keep this fundamentally, the Iran issue, off the president's desk.
So Plan C is in effect right now, then, at least the talking about it. Yes.
Henry, yes. Plan C is the world we're living in.
Henry Rome for the Washington Institute, Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.